You're listening to How To 20-Something, the only podcast that helps both men and women navigate their 20s and learn how to adult across all aspects of their lives. We're going to be focusing on career, relationships, finances, fitness, nutrition, and all of the common challenges and obstacles a typical 20-something will face in this post-college life and what to do about it. I'm your host, Jess Diamond, and I am the CEO and founder of Jess Diamond Coaching, where I help young professionals get their shit together, gain their confidence, and own their life. No one prepares you for this adulting world, so allow me to help you feel like you are no longer a chicken running around with its head cut off, and that you actually know what the hell is going on and what your next step to take is. Welcome to How To 20-Something. Welcome back to another episode of How To 20-Something. Today, I'm bringing on a guest to talk to you about your gut. So if you're someone who suffers with gut problems like bloating, gas, cramps, irregular bowel movements, and any other fun things that involve your digestion, then this episode is for you. However, I also want to preface this, like I do with most informative episodes, that this is general information, so please do not make any rash decisions about your health without consulting your doctor first. I personally used to suffer with frequent stomach aches and was diagnosed with IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome, and it was a loose diagnosis in my case because the gastroenterologist couldn't actually find something that was wrong with me. But I also know social media likes to make tummy problems trending and a normal thing, like hot girls get stomach aches. But we're here to tell you that it's not normal, and there are so many reasons as to why you're probably suffering right now, and we're here to help you figure out why this is happening and some helpful tips as to how you can improve your gut health so you aren't in pain regularly and start to heal it, actually, because you shouldn't be in pain regularly. So let's get into what's going on after I introduce who you're listening to, of course. So Mia Cedillo is a health and wellness coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist who is dedicated to giving you the tools and support you need to improve your physical well-being in a time where chronic disease is the natural result of living in society. Mia's business is centered around her faith, as she acknowledges that everything she has and does is thanks to and for God. Discover how Mia can serve you by visiting miasmentorship.com. It'll be linked in the show notes. And there you'll also find her health and wellness podcast, which I have been a guest on, and blog. Stay connected with her on Instagram at mias.mentorship for practical health and wellness tips and resources. Hi, Mia. Welcome to How To 20-Something.
Hi. Thank you. I'm happy to be on.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad I can return the favor of bringing you on my podcast after I was a guest on yours. So let's just begin with the common reasons why someone's gut is not doing so well. What have you found to be general causes for poor gut health?
Right. So there are a lot, as you would expect. With anything in health, there can always be a number of reasons why it's happening. So number one would be if you're eating a lot of processed foods, refined carbs, sugars, seed oils. If you are consuming antibiotics often, or hormones like birth control, steroids, anti-inflammatory meds, and even acid blockers. So people with GERD, which is gastro something reflux. So yeah, if you take those, then that can also cause gut issues. Another thing is stress. So this is something that people don't realize actually impacts their gut. Stress and lack of sleep are two really big ones, but those tend to be the hardest ones to get rid of, unfortunately, like the hardest things to manage. And then another thing would be overeating, and with that, not listening to your body. So whenever your body's telling you that you're full, or whenever you have a stomach ache, or whenever you have a headache, instead of just taking a Tylenol, we need to listen to, okay, why is this happening and what is my body telling me? And when we don't do that, then that makes gut issues way worse. So if you're full, listen to your body. And yeah, so ignoring these signals can lead to many gut issues that we see. And so yeah, those are just some of the common causes. Of course, there are other things, but those are the most general ones that we'll see.
Yeah, and we're going to be breaking down each of those causes throughout this episode, but the first one you mentioned was processed foods, and I want you to explain what it's actually doing to your gut when you eat a processed food diet. For those of you that don't know what processed foods are, it's anything you pretty much find in a bag. It's, you're chemically induced, it's something that's not naturally grown or can't be killed or found in the wild. Those are your processed foods. So why are processed foods destroying people's guts?
Right. So because with seed oils, it's because of inflammation. So that is a huge thing. So whenever you have inflammation, then that is what leads to all of the other issues. And then there's like the scientific aspect of why seed oils cause inflammation, but I won't bore your audience with that because that'll take too long to explain. But the main thing is inflammation, and we'll see inflammation in different ways. So inflammation could be skin inflammation, so noticing inflammation in your face or getting bloated, that's inflammation. You can also notice inflammation in your stool. If you look at your stool, then you can like constipation. That is a sign of inflammation. And so your body tells you these things. With sugars, that is a little more complicated. So with sugars, I'll try to break it down easily and briefly. So whenever you eat carbs or sugars, then that is turned into glucose in your body. And your body will usually use that glucose for immediate energy, but if it's not, then that glucose gets transported to glycogen stores in your liver and in your muscles for later use. But if you're never exercising or using that energy for later use, then your body can only store so much. So then those glycogen stores get turned into fat. And so that's why lowering your sugar intake or lowering your refined carb intake is really important. So that's summary for refined carbs and sugars and then seed oils.
Yeah. Okay. So those are some pretty good reasons as to why processed foods are not the best for you, among other things. They just are more palatable. You're going to overeat on those things. You're going to have a body that you don't love because you're consuming foods that aren't naturally produced for your body to have. Remember, I mentioned on tons of episodes, we have an outdated system in a modern day society. So we always have to think about how did we used to operate and try our best to mimic those times as best as possible, even knowing that technology is going to try to make our lives easier, but at the end of the day, it kind of makes things more difficult and leads to more problems like poor gut health.
Yeah, and that's another thing you kind of mentioned is like there's research necessarily to back up that sugar is actually addictive, but if you observe people and yourself, you can probably see that people have addictive like reactions and symptoms to things like sugar, but that's like outside of the gut health. But yeah, it's like there's so many reasons to eat these foods less. But yeah, on the gut side, definitely inflammation causing more fat in your body, because that also affects your mental health. What you eat affects your mental health. It also affects your, which with mental health comes your sleep and your stress. And so it's all full circle, so which we'll get more into.
Yeah. Basically, you're going to hear a lot of how it's all related. So can you talk about any, I know you've already talked about headaches, you talked about constipation, you talked about stomach aches, but are there any other signs and symptoms that someone should look out for to be able to present with their doctor with a list of this is what's wrong with me, just to kind of help give their doctor that overall picture so they can help better prescribe them or help them through this tummy problem?
Yeah, so I would say bloating, gas, diarrhea, stomach pain, irregular bowel movement, like constipation, or feeling uncomfortable after you're eating. So if after you eat, you feel uncomfortably bloated, that's not normal. That is an issue. And even with foods that would be seen as healthy if that's happening. Now, if you see that with refined carbs, sugars, and seed oils, that is typically a normal reaction, which is why I say you should just eat those foods less. But if you're still having that reaction with eating whole foods, then it's becoming an issue. Another thing is if you feel like you're getting weaker, so your bones are getting weaker, or even if you are in the gym and you've been weightlifting or you run, like whatever your exercise is, if you feel like you're getting weaker, that's something else you should present to your doctor that could be connected with gut issues. If you're getting sick more than usual, That's another big one. And but with being sick, that could also be a lot of different factors. But one to consider would be your gut. I won't get into all of that because that'd be another episode on its own. But that could mean that your gut is not absorbing all of the nutrients that it should be. Another thing would be your mental health. So if you're noticing changes in your mood, if you are feeling super stressed, and it's not because of another reason, like, okay, if you just got a new job or if your child is sick, it's probably that, right? But if everything is going the same, but you're feeling super stressed more than you would normally, it could be related to your gut. Another one is just other mental health issues. So, for example, feeling more emotional, more anxious, feelings of depression, not clinical, but just feelings of depression. Again, that's not obviously related to something else happening in your life. And so your gut and your brain are connected again. I'm assuming we can move into that next. But yeah, if your gut is not happy, then you're getting unhappy signals sent to your brain too.
Yeah. So you mentioned bloating and I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about one thing I didn't hear you mention, but this is something that happened to me personally. It's happened to my friends of skin issues, skin irritations, or skin breakouts. For me, it was I found out I was allergic to dairy, and the way the allergy would present itself is I would get cystic pimples all over my face, and I thought it was hormonal until I realized, like, no, my hormones feel fine. It's not based off of time of the month or anything. It's just always there. So I cut out dairy to just give it a try. I know with psoriasis or with eczema, like, all those things come up. They can be a result of something going on in your gut. Is there anything in regards to skin health that you want to touch on? I know I just kind of listed a bunch, but anything that you want to add to, and then we'll get into bloating.
Sure. Yeah, I would say, yeah, so dairy is a big one. If you are having like eczema, that's usually the most common one would be eczema with dairy. Other than the obvious, like if you're lactose intolerant, for example, then you'll see issues in the bathroom. But as far as skin goes, yes, eczema is a really common one that's related to dairy and vegetable oils as well. So whenever I say vegetable or seed oils, I'm referring to the same thing. There's a lot of them, but the most common ones would be sunflower, canola, cottonseed, safflower. Those are all vegetable oils, corn oil. Vegetable oils are also linked to skin issues. I believe sugar, as I mentioned earlier, with inflammation, so it can make skin issues worse. So if you've dealt with eczema or psoriasis in the past, then sugar can make that worse because of the inflammation. Same with the seed oils, that makes the inflammation worse.
Yeah, I know one thing I wanted to add to it of when I cut out dairy, within 24 hours, I noticed my jaw, like I don't have a puffy face, but it's also a face I see every day. So if I am inflamed, and for those of you listening, if you are inflamed, you probably don't realize it because it's your norm. But then when you go to dive deeper and put on your little detective hat and start to do an elimination-based diet just to see if there's any one particular food group bothering you, you'll notice it immediately. Like, I remember sending pictures to my friends. I was like, my jaw just feels snatched. Like, I can see my jawline and everything. And it's not that it wasn't there before. It was just so much more prevalent after the fact.
Yeah.
All right. So the other thing that you mentioned was bloating. And I've talked to clients about this before because I think it gets a little misconstrued as to what bloating actually is. And I want to know if you agree with this or if there's anything else you can add to it, but I'll have clients be like, oh, I'm bloated after meals. And when I start to ask questions of what does that actually mean for them, they're just full. They're content. They've eaten their meal and now their belly protrudes out. Whereas bloating is like, it's air, it's gas, it's painful. It's not comfortable. It's not an overeating sense. It's more of a, your body just feels like it's blowing up like a balloon. So what are ways that you've helped clients kind of better understand bloating, or you personally, or ways to start to dive deeper into what that bloating actually means for them and how to help it if they are experiencing bloating? So anything in that area, but I'll let you have the floor.
Sure, yeah. So looking at what you ate and how much you ate is a big thing when considering, is this an issue or not? Because like I said, having bloating whenever eating the refined carbs, sugars, and seed oils, or when overeating, that's just a natural reaction that your body's going to have. So that's not necessarily an issue to where you need to go to the doctor to get that checked out. So yeah, considering what it is that you're eating, how much you ate, did you stop when you were full, or did you overeat is a huge thing. So if you didn't eat that much and you're experiencing bloating, then it's how I like play with it too. So do you only feel bloated, which means, yeah, like having your stomach sticks out a little more because you're full? Is it because of how much you ate? So that if that is a concern, then I would pull back. Okay, eat half your meal and then pause. Like, you're not full, you could eat more, and see if you get bloated within like 20 minutes. If you do, then it could be what you ate, or it could be in a not allergic reaction, but like you could be sensitive to that food, whatever it was you ate. And so experimenting with yourself on what it is, because everyone's body is different. Some people, like, whenever I eat grains, even if it's like unrefined, sprouted, or not sprouted, but usually if it's like unrefined long grain brown rice, for example, if I eat that even just a little bit, I will get more inflammation from that. I won't feel uncomfortable bloating, but even if I have just a little bit, my like stomach will stick out more than if I had vegetables or meat or whatever fruit, like whatever else it might be. So yeah, understanding yourself and experimenting with it and logging it. So then you can see a pattern over time to see, oh, it's whenever I eat these kinds of foods, or oh, it's whenever I eat this much. Like maybe I'm eating a little too much. I need to stop whenever I'm full instead of like keep eating more and more, portion out better, whatever it might be. So that's the general advice I would give to my clients. And then after we have information gathered, then we can dive deeper into exactly what it might be for them and taking next steps.
Yeah, avocados make me bloat really badly, and it is, I have to unbutton my pants, I need to lay down, I'm in a lot of pain, like it is bloating to the nth degree. So for me, I make a decision of if I'm out to dinner and my meal comes with avocados, I love avocados, and I have to decide, well, what am I doing after this? Can I go lay down within 30 minutes of finishing this meal, or am I expected to go do things? And if I can go lay down, then yeah, I'm going to go have avocado. Or if I'm eating sushi, most rolls come with avocado, so I'm going to keep it in there, but know that I'm going to be in pain after, and it's something I'm going to have to deal with. I also don't make it a regular occurrence. And I want to add to another tidbit of this is, waking up bloated is also a red flag of your body is screaming a message to you. You should not wake up bloated because you're waking up in a fasted state. So clearly something's not going well in your gut and you should go to a doctor and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. And also with, I don't have any major, like I'm not lactose intolerant or like gluten-free or anything like that. But I have met other people where they say that if they take enzymes before, then that really helps. And so, like, for example, with your avocado, like, if you know, oh, I'm going to have avocado, taking an enzyme before to lessen the symptoms that you expect afterwards.
I hadn't thought of that. So that is something I should probably do because I do like avocados and I don't like suffering. I want to move into stress because you've mentioned it a couple times now. And yeah. I know for me personally, this might be TMI for everybody listening, but I get nervous shits. If I'm traveling or if I'm about to do a speaking event, if I'm nervous in any way, you'll find me running to the bathroom. But I also know this has to do with stress. Can you explain how stress impacts your gut, how you can manage stress, what's actually happening in your body, and just any tools to help those listening?
Yes. So stress, like I said, mind-gut connection, so stress includes that. So whenever you are stressed, your body enters what everyone's probably heard of, which is fight or flight mode. But what that really is that your sympathetic nervous system is working really hard. So you have a parasympathetic and a sympathetic nervous system. Sympathetic is fight or flight. Parasympathetic is your rest and digest. Now, they can both work at the same time, but one is usually more overpowered than the other. So this mode prepares your body to respond to a perceived threat, even if you're not in danger, this is how your body reacts. And like you mentioned, kind of looking back to traditional societies, that was necessary, right? Like back then. Now we don't have to worry about that so much. Like a bear is not about to attack us, but we are going to have to wait in line. We're going to be 5 minutes late for work, and our bodies has the same reaction. So whenever you do this, then your body, it halts non-emergency bodily functions, which includes digestion. So like I said, it's rest and digest, and then fight or flight. So if your body is mostly focused like on fight or flight, then it's not going to be in rest and digest mode. So this can cause constipation, it can cause pain, it can cause bloating, and it can also actually hinder how much nutrients your body is absorbing whenever you're eating food. For example, let's say you're at work and you're eating, but you're also like on your computer doing something, like you're stressed while you're eating. That can actually also hinder the nutrients that your body is going to absorb, and of course how well your body is taking in that food. So that's another thing with the bloating, is you might experience bloating for eating foods that you've never experienced bloating before, but it's because you're stressed. That's because your body is not digesting it properly. So this being said, chronic stress can disrupt the balance of your gut microbiome if you're always stressed, and then this can lead to an overgrowth of harmful bacteria and then a decline in beneficial bacteria. And then this just leads to further digestive issues, like IBS would be an example of one. And then this also affects your immune system and your overall health, other areas of your life. So keeping stress,
it's all connected,
control is definitely like important for a healthy gut. So a couple things, like takeaways that your audience, I'm not just gonna end with that and then be like, yeah, it sucks to suck. So some simple things you can do. Number one would be deep breathing. So that's a really big one. So breathing in for 5 seconds, breathing out for 5 seconds, and being present in the moment. So this can, if you are breathing like a person who's not stressed, even if you are stressed, that can help your body go into the parasympathetic nervous system mode more, like use that more instead of the sympathetic. If you're able to, writing in a journal, so whatever is in your mind, get it on paper, like try to forget about it, worry about it later. That's a really helpful tool. Meditating or praying, if you're like a Christian, praying is really helpful. And then light exercise can actually help as well. Get into a rest and digest state. Now, whenever, like, I'm going to give a small example. I wouldn't say lifting super heavy because you're putting your body under stress. And so that's just going to make it worse. That's happened before, is where I was stressed in the morning and I went to the gym. And I was lifting super heavy weight and it just, like, made it so much worse. And I was like, that was stupid. And so I had to stop in the middle of my workout and go and just, like, walk on the treadmill and then go on the sauna. Because, yeah, I was like, that was a really dumb decision. So, but light exercise can help. So, like, walking, for example. This will help your body relax, take it easy, and then focus on the normal things like digestion. Whenever your body switches from the sympathetic to the parasympathetic, then your body can focus on things like digestion. And then getting enough sleep is also really important. So stress and sleep is also interrelated a lot.
For my audience listening, they hear me talk about how important sleep is in like every other episode. So the fact that you're bringing it up this time is very refreshing, but I'll let you continue.
Yes, yes. So stress and sleep are very interrelated. Like whenever people can't sleep well, my first thing is like, do you feel like you're pretty stressed? Like that is what is hindering your sleep. And that's also connected with the parasympathetic and sympathetic. Because if you're stressed, then again, sympathetic is taking control so you can all rest and digest. Like they're connected. And so you need to do like the breathing, especially that's an activity that I've seen work for my clients is whenever you do deep breathe and disconnect before bed. Now, I understand that's not, a lot of people can't do that. For example, not the breathing, but like disconnecting for like an hour before bed. A lot of people can't do that because they have kids or like how their schedules work. But deep breathing is something where you can just do it for 5 minutes and most people can make that happen. So yeah, whenever you sleep well, that helps your balance of good bacteria in your gut, lower stress, even stop cravings for foods that you're trying to eat less of. So aiming for 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night, but not just the quantity, but the quality of your sleep matters a lot, which I'm sure you've talked about if you talk about sleep a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so the quality matters. Keeping a regular sleep schedule is an important thing. So going to bed and waking up around the same time each night. Again, I know not everyone can do that, especially if you're a nurse, firefighter, police officer, if you're in the military. Like, of course, you're not everyone's able to do that. But if you are able to, definitely prioritize that in your life. Yeah, I think that covers the general aspect of it.
Yeah, I have my clients do deep breathing exercises as well to help calm themselves down. Because I want to explain to you guys listening that when you're stressed, this whole parasympathetic, sympathetic nervous system, what's actually happening is all the blood in your body is going to your extremities, so your arms and legs. Because, again, even though you're not actually being chased by a bear, because that's the example that Mia gave, and you could just very well be 5 minutes late to work and just stuck in some traffic, your body can't tell the difference. So it's still thinking you are being chased by that bear and you need to run away as fast as possible. So it's going to stop everything and just move all the blood flow to your arms and legs to make that possible. That's why that's happening. So think, anytime you're stressed, it's like, oh crap, I'm letting all the blood go away from everything that I actually need it to be. So your brain power, your focus, your mental energy, and then also your gut and your digestion and your heart. Well, it's obviously going to pump your heart faster, but
yeah,
you get the point that I'm saying. It's moving away from what you want it to do, and for a reason that you don't even need, because if you're sitting in your car, you're clearly not running at all.
Right, yeah. And I think another thing that's helpful on top of the deep breathing is being aware of your surroundings, so becoming present. Because I think whenever we're stressed, we're often thinking about what's like coming, like, oh, I'm going to be late, or whatever it might be as it's coming up. And so it's usually thinking like about the future, right? It's anxiety, thinking about what's going to happen in the future. So being present under, like, getting, I feel like we can often, which maybe it's just me, but I often think it's the end of the world. Like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be 5 minutes late. And like, if I'm 5 minutes late, I'm not going to get fired. Like, my friends aren't going to scold me. You know, it's, life happens. Everyone knows that. And so it's not a big deal. Understanding, am I safe? Yes, I'm safe. So if you're safe, I feel like understanding that, like, okay, I'm not being chased by a bear. I'm in my car. And even, I think what's really helpful, so I like to listen to audiobooks or podcasts or music in my car. But some, if I'm stressed, having that noise can actually make it worse for me. And so I will just turn off everything and roll down the window so I can just hear outside and like, and become connected with the present moment. Because if something's playing, that will prevent me. That's like a block for me being present in the moment. And so I'm just going to roll down the window, hear the wind, listen to the cars, listen to the birds. And I feel like that is really relaxing as well to help me not stress. And for example, like if you're in the car, for things like that, because I feel like we do often get stressed in the car. It's a common thing. It's a common environment for stress.
Yeah, well, I know where you live and it's the same thing where I live. It's honestly worse here, and I know that's probably hard to believe. So Mia lives in Orlando area, and that's where I moved from, so I know both Charlotte and Orlando. Charlotte has the worst drivers. No one knows laws, no one knows anything. Orlando has tourists. So, I mean, pick and choose your battles at that point. But I want to add, with everything that we're saying, of the stress while you're eating is only becoming worse if you're also eating in front of a screen. So if you're distracting yourself, because I think that's, at the end of the day, that's what we're telling you, is if you're distracting yourself from the present moment with a movie or a show on TV or scrolling on TikTok or on social media or even, I mean, on a stressful conversation, if you're on the phone with someone or having a stressful conversation, all those things are going to disrupt your stomach, your digestion, and everything that you're putting into your body is all going to kind of get messed up. So just keep that in mind of really at the end of the day is, are you existing in that present moment with your meal, or are you trying to multitask and get a bunch of things done at the same time, like driving or like working or like catching up on all your emails or scrolling on social media and seeing who posted what throughout the day because you didn't get a chance to while you're eating dinner. So it's all under that same umbrella of a distraction. I know I'm definitely guilty of scrolling on my phone or watching Netflix while I'm eating. And it's very common in today's society. We have screens everywhere.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, it's because whenever mindful eating is boring.
Yeah.
A lot of times, especially when you're just starting mindful eating, because whenever you're mindful eating, usually you are understanding, okay, am I full? Sure, I have like 10 bites left, but I'm full now, so I'm going to save that for later. So mindful eating is also like staying in tune to what does my body need right now. And I think like eating with your family is great also.
Or a significant other.
Right, yes, yeah.
Or roommates.
Yeah, eating with people, that is great, yeah. But when, yeah, I would say if you don't have anyone around you, then do just eat, enjoy your food. But again, that can be boring. That's why you would go to your phone or something else. What I like to do actually is it's so funny, but it helps. I have a coloring book and I will like get my crayons, and as I'm eating, I'll like be coloring in the coloring book because it's relaxing, it's mindless, you know, so then I can still focus on what I'm eating. It's not like scrolling.
I like that idea. That's good.
Yeah, because because then there's like the dopamine with scrolling. So one person might say, well, what's the difference between scrolling and coloring? Like, you're still doing something. Yes, you're still doing something, but it's what that is doing to your brain. So coloring for me is relaxing, which I could also say sometimes scrolling can be relaxing, but there's also that sense of dopamine where, especially if you're scrolling and you don't know what's coming next, there's that release in your mind where it's like, oh, what's next, you know, and you can get trapped in that. And then if you become in a habit of watching something while eating, let's say you always watch TV while you're eating, then whenever you want to watch TV, but it's not meal time, let's say it's 3 o'clock, so between lunch and dinner, if you have a habit of eating and watching TV, then you're gonna want to snack because you always have that habit of eating and watching TV or eating and scrolling. So if you're scrolling on your phone, even though it's not dinner time, you're just kind of trying to pass time, then if you're always eating while scrolling, then you'll want to go for a snack again, right? And so it's just those connections. So having certain activities separate from eating. Now, if it's something, like if you only scroll when you eat, maybe, like, that's a little better, but still, I would say just it's best if you don't.
I never thought about that, so that is actually something that I'm learning right along with you guys, but we've kind of dabbled around mental health, what's going on inside your brain, and I want to finally dive into this connection between your gut health and your mental health, because they say your gut is your second brain. There's the sayings of, I feel it in my gut, or gut instinct, or listen to your gut, and it's just everything originates from there. So what can you tell my audience about this connection between your gut health and your mental health?
Right. So the gut and the brain, they are definitely connected, and this is often referred to as the gut-brain axis. Now, whenever I'm talking about this, I want to preface that there is not a lot of research around this. There is research around it, but there's not a lot of, for example, clinical trials around it, so heavy research around it. And so it's more of correlation. I don't know if scientifically it could be causation. It's mostly correlation that we see. Just want to preface that. So this connection allows the gut and its bacteria to communicate with the brain through nerves and hormones. A really big example of this that I like to use is leptin resistance. So leptin is the hormone that communicates between your gut and your brain. So whenever you're full, then the hormone leptin tells your brain, I am full. But if you eat a lot of sugars, so sugar is the only food that does this, which is why it's really important to be aware of how much sugar you're eating. Because if you are overeating sugar, then that can cause leptin resistance, which means that your brain's not getting the signal that your stomach's full. And so it's really easy to overeat. So if you have leptin resistance, then you're just going to keep eating. Like, you're not in tune with your gut. So that's why, like, when it comes to intuitive eating, you have to see, am I leptin resistant? Because if you are intuitively eating, but you're leptin resistant, it's not going to work. So you have to make sure that your hormones are in check too whenever it comes to intuitive eating. So that's just one small example. But yeah, so the gut microbiome, this has trillions of bacteria in it. And so this helps in digesting food. It helps in producing chemicals that affect your mood and your mental health. For instance, a large portion of the body's serotonin, which is a hormone that helps regulate your mood, this is produced in the gut. So whenever you maintain a healthy gut, this will have a positive impact on your food. But if you, on the other end of that, if you are eating unhealthy foods and you have an unhealthy gut, then this can trigger mood changes, stress, and then other mental health issues. Also, another example of like proving the gut-brain connection, and this is really interesting. I recently made this, like, I feel like it's obvious, but I recently made this connection. The reason that we tend to go to foods like ice cream or cake or pizza whenever we're stressed or sad is because most of our brains have a connection between fun and those foods and happiness in those foods. Like whenever you're a kid, birthday parties, what are you eating? Pizza and ice cream and cake. And so those foods are associated with good, happy memories. So that's why we tend to go to those foods and you're not craving broccoli or chicken, you know? And so that's also really interesting about the gut-brain connection is how our minds associate certain foods or even smells with memories. And so we tend to lean more towards those things. And then also that can, like when it comes to cravings and things, that's also beyond that. There's more explanation for cravings, like for example, with your like insulin or blood glucose, like spikes, blood sugar levels, things like that. That's another side of it. But yeah, the gut-brain connection is one of the sides of that.
I do like that thought of you associate happy memories with all these junk foods because it's true and it makes so much sense as to why you gravitate towards that. And I have a whole episode, I cannot remember for the life of me. I think it comes out right before this one, but it talks about your cravings. It may have already come out. I honestly lose track of everything at this point because it's all just, I'm like, okay, it's done. And I send it off into the upload world and we're just done with it. So it could have come out today for all I know. Anyways, this is just all so fascinating. I love learning about gut health, but I want to kind of pivot topics a little bit, obviously still in the realm of gut health, but what I mean is I asked my Insta followers if there was anything in particular they wanted to know about gut health, and I kid you not, almost every single response, and by almost every, I think there was only one response that didn't ask about this, but it was in regards to prebiotics and probiotics. So it was a bunch of questions in that area. Where do prebiotics and probiotics come into play with gut health?
Okay, so I wanted to make this brief and understandable without going into too much scientific jargon that's going to get people lost. So, prebiotics and probiotics, they are beneficial bacteria that can be added to your gut microbiome through certain foods or supplements. If anyone knows me, and you've probably said this, it's like, if you can get it from food before a supplement. Like, that's, I'm always going to preface that. So, these bacteria, the pre and probiotics, they help maintain a healthy balance of the gut flora. And so they aid in digestion. They support your immune system. So for example, foods that are high in probiotics would be yogurt, kefir, fermented vegetables like sauerkraut, kimchi, even pickles. And also you want to look at, so for example, with yogurt and kefir, you want to get yogurt that has the live bacteria in it, like whole milk yogurt. Don't get the stuff with added sugar or flavoring, like it plain. Whole milk yogurt with the live cultures. Stony Valley is a really good brand for yogurt and kefir. Because there are like most 95% of the yogurts at your grocery store are going to be ones that I would say to stay away from. And same with kefir. Doesn't taste the best, but you can mix things with it to make it taste better, like honey, fruit, cinnamon, things like that. So then prebiotics. These are a dietary fiber that helps feed the beneficial bacteria in your gut. So probiotics without prebiotics don't do much. You need a combo. If you look at supplements, a lot of them are only probiotics. Those aren't going to be helpful. You need a probiotic-prebiotic combo if you're going to go the supplement route, because that's what feeds it. So these bacteria help produce nutrients for your body, again, leading to a healthier digestive system, which then affects all the symptoms we were listing earlier, like the constipation, bloating, diarrhea, things like that. And then some foods that are rich in prebiotics would be bananas, onions, garlic, and sprouted grains. So you can get the sprouted grains would be like sprouted bread, sprouted seeds, sprouted nuts. And again, with this topic, while the benefits of these foods, they're widely recognized, the effects do vary from person to person. And a diet rich in both of these foods, they can contribute, definitely, as I've seen with myself and with my friends and with my clients. They definitely do help contribute to a well-balanced gut microbiome. But it's also important to note that a lot of the supplements are not the best quality. For example, right now there's not too much scientific data on it, but like, let's just say it says 8 billion live whatever bacterias. It's still being studied what number is best of what strains, because there are a lot of different strains of probiotics and prebiotics, and so there's a lot of studies still going on with that. So even when if you supplement, looking at how it's affecting your body and trying different brands, if it's not affecting your body in the best way. Because there is still a lot of research going on around that. And so like seeing what's ideal. And of course, what's ideal isn't going to be general. It's also depending on each person. I actually know someone where there is a strain. It's I forgot what it was. So it's like lacto and then bees something. It's one of the common strains that you see on the supplements of the probiotics. And she actually has allergic reactions to that. And whenever she has foods that have that probiotic in it, she like can't eat those foods. And so I also, that's like not a very known thing that people can actually have sensitivities to types of probiotics. So understanding that as well. So yeah, one of like the pros of eating probiotics is definitely it helps aid in digestion for most people. But understanding where to get those kinds of foods is really important. And so also whenever you have a diet that is whole foods, so like meats, fruits, vegetables, full fat dairy, like if you don't have reactions to it, obviously, sprouted foods, fermented foods, those foods are also going to help balance your gut flora. And so eating more of those kinds of foods are also going to help with your gut microbiome as a whole. And like I said, eating foods that have probiotics and prebiotics naturally is always going to be better than supplementing. And that's with anything. Like if you can get all your protein from food, you don't need to take a protein powder, you know? And so that's with any supplementation or even taking vitamins. You can get the vitamins from good quality food. Just eat the foods, you don't need to take the vitamins and like waste your money on that.
Yeah, there's so many supplements out there and so many vitamins out there. And it's really one, I have a supplement episode coming out. This one I know for sure is coming out after yours, but it is, I've mentioned it in there, try to get it from Whole Foods, but also get your test done, get minerals and metals test done, get a hormone panel, see what your body is naturally lacking, see if you can get it from Whole Foods, and even then your body might not process it well where you need extra, and that's okay, that's where those things come in. But I always say protein powder is a tool and use it as such. It's not the end all be all. You should be getting most of your protein, if not all of it, from Whole Foods. So I like that you're mentioning this about like prebiotics, probiotics, all these things. Are there any cons to taking either prebiotics or probiotics, like any downsides to these things?
I would say depends on the brand. So like I said, if you only get a probiotic, I wouldn't say it's a con except for the fact that you're not getting all the benefits and if it was a pre-pro combo. Like I mentioned, the studies. So we're still not really sure on how much is the best, how much is too much, if there is too much. what strains are too much, things like that. So understanding that balance, there's still a lot of research going on as far as the supplementation. And then thirdly would be there are some brands with a lot of added stuff added to it, or even health foods that are like, oh, this has so many pre and probiotics, or usually it's just probiotics. So, oh, this food has so many probiotics in it, even though it's like a man-made, like it's like a natural food. So it's like a man-made health food that was put together. But then there's a bunch of added junk in it. So just being aware of that.
A podcast that I listen to that I mention a lot of times on my podcast talks, they partner with Seed, and it's talk about how amazing that, I think it's actually a prebiotic probiotic. And one of my best friends took it when she was having gut health problems, and her gut has been fine ever since. Like, it actually healed her gut with whatever was going on. And I asked her if it had anything to do with antibiotics. So for one, I'll try and link Seed in the show notes if I remember. And if I don't, call me out on it and I will send it to you. But it's S-E-E-D, like normal Seed. It's Dr. Seed is the doctor. It's his name. But I always think it's ironic because like seed oils, gut health, all those things and how they're connected. But the other part is that I want to bring up with antibiotics is knowing that that wipes out your stomach. Like, you need to be supplementing, or you really should think about supplementing with prebiotics and probiotics after, or if not while you're going through a course of antibiotics. Can you talk about the ways that antibiotics hurts your gut microbiome and how to, aside from any prebiotic probiotics, how you can counteract some of those negative effects or start to heal your gut after the fact? If not, I guess, like, if not protect it before you start this course of antibiotics for whatever reason it may be.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. The antibiotics, they do kill, like, not only the harmful bacteria that you are trying to obviously mitigate the symptoms of, but of the beneficial bacteria. And so this can lead to a disbalance of your gut microbiome, which if you start having like digestive issues during this time, like while you're sick and taking antibiotics, it's because of the antibiotics most likely. So yeah, to counteract those things, like you said, the pro and probiotics, they definitely help get back the beneficial bacteria that your gut needs to digest well. But also, again, going back to the foods, eating like while you're sick, while you're taking antibiotics, eating a lot more foods that are rich in pro and prebiotics. Also, just maintaining an overall healthy lifestyle will help with that. So regular exercise, sufficient sleep, stress management, that's all also going to help support your gut health whenever you're taking antibiotics. Now, if you're sick, do not go and lift weights at the gym. It's going to hinder your healing. So be mindful of that. But definitely sleeping a lot whenever you're sick. So another thing I like to, instead of taking antibiotics, go the natural way of things if it's like not severe. So if it's severe and the natural things aren't helping, like yes, take antibiotics. I'm not like anti-antibiotics, but I am try the natural remedies first before going to that. So even things like if you feel like you're getting sick, honey is an antioxidant and it can be really helpful if like you get like raw local honey. Eat that more, like if you can tell your body's getting sick. And I've tried that myself and it does help like lessen or prevent it from getting worse. If I wake up in the morning and I'm feeling a little off, then I won't wait a day or two to see if it gets worse. I will immediately begin to eat more pre and probiotic foods and I will have honey. And then there's also teas, depending on, of course, what you're dealing with. So going the natural way before going to the antibiotic, you can avoid the antibiotic, do that. But if you do end up going to it, then yes, taking care of your body to still care for your gut in that time and after as well.
Yeah, I mean, some infections you really can't prevent. But sicknesses, I would say, a lot of times, if it's, I don't know, what is the difference? Like bacterial, you kind of need it. But I'm the same way. Yeah, I try my best to get ahead of the second I get a scratchy throat is, what can I do? What do I need to take? Like vitamin D, vitamin C. I do honey. Like I'll do a spoonful of honey and do that. I like that you mentioned make sure, or not make sure, but try your best to have it be locally grown, because that's the environment that you're currently in. So you're going to want that to help you boost your immune system as best as possible. So yeah, these are all great things. Are there any, you've mentioned a lot of tips, so this is great, but are there any practical tips someone can start implementing like right now? If they're listening to this and they're like, this is great, but my tummy is hurting and I still have my whole work day ahead of me, what is something they can do to just take care of themselves in this moment?
Yeah. So I would go back again to the what you're eating. So eat more quality fatty meats, organ meats, dairy, full fat dairy. Again, be careful of what kind of dairy you're getting. Fermented and sprouted foods, fresh fruits and vegetables, local if you can. Eating less refined carbs, sugar, seed oils, and including refined grains. So like opt for sprouted grains instead of whole grains, for example. Staying physically active. Now, if that issue is worse than while you're exercising, then just stay very light. But that will help with your gut as well. Especially like if you're dealing with constipation. Moving is going to really help with that. So yeah, staying hydrated. That's something that a lot of people forget about. So drinking enough water, not only daily, but especially if you are having gut issues. Again, it's also possible to overdo water. So for example, if you have too much water, that might cause bloating in itself. So just having like a good measurement would be half your body weight in ounces is like a good amount. But that shouldn't make you bloated. Now, if you're like 100 pounds and you're having a whole gallon, that's too much. So you shouldn't have that much. Again, adequate sleep, making sure you're getting the 7 to 9 hours of quality sleep. And then lastly would be mindful eating. So pay attention to what you're eating. Pay attention to your fullness cues. See what is it that is causing the issues. Yeah, I would say those are a good amount of tips to get started. And then, of course, as it continues to worsen, and then there's more steps you can take from there.
Yeah, and see a doctor if you need to. And I know we didn't mention, we're wrapping up this episode, we didn't talk about Crohn's or SIBO or really dive into actual diagnoses, because this is for general knowledge for someone that just has some stomach aches and they're frequent, but they're not severe, debilitating, need to go to a doctor right now, because obviously if that's the case, then you shouldn't be listening to a podcast. You should be at the doctor's office. But to wrap this up, how I end every guest episode is just to ask you, are there any final piece of advice you want to give someone who's listening that wants to take care of their gut health?
Yeah, so it's actually piggybacking off what you just said. If you try these things, but you continue to experience gut issues, whether minor or severe, and if they're hindering your life especially, go to a functional medicine doctor. Why I say functional medicine over conventional Western medicine doctor is because a functional medicine doctor will look at what is the root cause of these symptoms. They're not going to look at how can I cover these symptoms with a Band-Aid. And so if you do not know, like you might be asking now, well, how do I know who's functional and who's Western medicine? If you go to ifm.org, then you can see all of the functional medicine doctors around you. And there's general like practitioners, there's pediatricians, there's cardiologists, there's gynecologists, there are like gastroenterologists. Again, it'll depend. Of course, the variety will depend on how big of an area you're in. Like I'm in Orlando, so there's a lot. But if you're in a smaller town, you might have to travel a little bit to find one. Like to the nearest large city or something, there probably won't be as much around. You have all those different, what of us were I thinking of?
Specialties.
Yeah. So there may not be all the specialties, but definitely go to a functional medicine doctor because they will prioritize doing the testing that needs to be done. A lot of Western medicine doctors, they will do as little testing as possible. And that's not to say like they are, like they have this evil intent or anything and they don't care about you. But they, with just how that environment is, it is very much like, okay, we need to get them in and out.
They just don't have the time.
Yeah, like they don't have the time, and a lot, like they typically don't do that kind of stuff often. So if you ask for something, like they might not even have, like know how to do it or have, like, because they don't do it often or, you know. So yeah, functional medicine doctors are a lot better whenever it comes to testing and understanding what's the root cause. But the great thing is that they also have the ability to prescribe things if needed. So That's definitely what I'd recommend.
I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't even think about bringing that up in this episode. So this was great. Thank you, Mia, so much for coming on How To 20 Something.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Yeah, where can people find you? I know we mentioned at the start, but we'll mention again. Where can people find you if they want to hear more about what you have to say or who you are or the work that you do?
Yeah, so you can, in one easy spot would be my website, miasmentorship.com. So you can find all of like my podcast, my blog, my services. You can find my socials on there. You can find everything on there. But if you want to go directly to my socials, for example, then I'm most active on Instagram, where my username is mias.mentorship.
Yes, and all of that will be linked in the show notes for you guys to access per usual. But seriously, if you're going to take anything away from this episode, let it be to take care of your gut and that your bloating isn't normal. So please try to naturally find out what's going on, but also consult a doctor. Just get to the bottom of what's happening, because we don't want you to suffer. You shouldn't be suffering. But otherwise, this concludes another episode of How To 20 Something. If you liked what you heard, please share it with a friend or on social media and tag me or tag Mia when you do. And I can't wait to be in your headphones again next week with another brand new episode.